This is CliffCentral.com. Yeah, baby. Yeah. Yet again, another one of those absolutely fantastic days. It's Unplugged and In Charge on CliffCentral.com. Thank you very much for listening in. Man, yet again another great day, isn't it? It's the shortest hour of the week. I like to call it that because, in fact, it ends up being like that. Because we normally have people in the studio who are doing exceptional things. I learned recently that I should actually say that these are ordinary people who say extraordinary things. And, of course, that just coupling on each other and just multiplying makes them extraordinary people because of all the things that they do on a daily. And of course, you listening to this show, you becoming part of that tribe of superstar leaders, people who are listening in, trying to, of course, better their own lives, because sometimes it is in getting something from someone else, a spark from someone else that can ignite your fire, your flame, because you got the fuel already. You just need that little bit of a spark sometimes. Or in fact, you already got the fire going, but you just need to keep the drive alive. And how you keep the drive alive is by listening to a show like this one right here. And thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. If that's what you're doing right now, it's always a pleasure to give you, you know, some great content. And also to just unearth amazing, amazing stories from South Africans who are doing so much, breaking boundaries, breaking ground, and really coming up with some new things. I've got in studio with me a couple of gentlemen. Now, the really great thing is that some of them are in accounting and they've got their own firms and they're doing some stuff. It's small, but it gotta start small to get big. You know, they say you gotta get started to get great. You don't have to be great to get started, but you just gotta get started. And you're gonna hear some of their stories as well, and they come up and you know how much they learned from all of that, and just, you know, what they do on a daily. And I've got another gentleman, man, he's writing books. He was telling me earlier how actually affordable it is for you to write a book. Just get the content and all sorts of things. And we're going to learn from that too. And I'm actually going to try and introduce them more or less at the same time and just zoom in on one character and then get to zoom in on the other. I'm going to start with Brian Mhlongo. He's right here with me. He's the man with the glasses. He's wearing, like, you know what I mean? He's got that classic man look today. He's got the waistcoat going on, you know, double breast, you know, all things good, you know. And then he also has to hit us with the glasses as well. So let me actually get to greet him and let's actually get to see what is up in his life. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Excellent, excellent. Thank you very much for joining me.
I'm not happy with the one thing. It's Brian Mhlongo.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Oh, I see it now. You know, I just checked it really quickly. Mhlongo. Yes, you're absolutely right. Muma. It's tomato, but it doesn't, it's not the same. This is Brian. Now I'm even nervous to say it wrong. Okay, cool. Cool stuff, Brian. So tell me, you are an author at the moment, right?
Yeah.
And this is one of the things you do. What do you write about?
Well, the first book I wrote about my experiences growing up, coming out from a very disadvantaged background in terms of being illiterate, you know.
Yeah.
Literate, you know. Mm-hmm. And growing up and actually overcoming all the obstacles of being told you're never going to make it, and actually going to school and upgrading myself to be a better person, which led me to actually wanting to tell people about the journey of how I actually got to where I got to.
Wow. Now, who were some of the naysayers, some of the people who were telling you that you're not going to make it, you're not going to do well in that thing that you wanted to do back in the day?
I remember growing up, you know, in school, and one of my teachers was saying that, you know, asked me to actually stand up in class and said, Brian, please read for us. And I was actually a grown up at that time, and I couldn't read.
How old were you at the time?
I think I was around about 10 or so.
Grown up. You call yourself a grown up at 10. Okay, yes, you're 10 years old and you can't read at that time.
At that time, you know, and I actually struggled with it till I was about in matric, you know, which was very hard for me. It actually isolated me from a lot of things. Yeah. Find break time instead of going playing with the guys, you actually in classes trying to catch up, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a a bit hard at that time. And actually having that and actually going back home to deal with abuse, you know. You know, I had a bit of up and downs with my stepdad growing up, you know.
Yeah.
He also did contribute in terms of me being very much disconfident with myself, you know.
Yeah.
So it's all that, that actually, that foundation that actually contributed into me coming out now and saying, you know what, probably there's a lot of kids out there dealing with similar issues, you know, and people are not helping them but discouraging them, you know. So
man, that must not have been easy. I can imagine growing up and then starting to feel like you lack confidence, like, and people know you as that, he's that shy one, you know. And yet you probably had dreams, things that you wanted to do, but you felt like being shy was getting in your way. Did you ever feel that?
A lot, mm-hmm. a lot. You know, you isolated from a lot of things, you know. You become your... You start living in your own shell, you know. I must say, at a very young age, you don't communicate a lot of these things, especially if you're a boy, you know. You keep it inside of yourself and you just live life, you know. Hoping one day that things will be different. And I'm glad that, you know, I did get to that point where things were different.
Now, what actually contributed to that? Because I can imagine that there's also a lot of negative self-talk that was happening as well.
Yeah.
Because some of the things people say start to become things that you say to yourself. You know, it becomes like internal self-talk, and you say things to yourself now, and you say, yeah, you see, they were right. You know, all that type of stuff. How did you deal with that inner voice?
I must say, at first, I didn't know how to deal with it. But growing up, you know, I didn't even think I'll get to university. Mm. And when I had my foot in at the University of Johannesburg, you know, that's when I started seeing more of what's out there and what I can do as a person, you know. I remember one of the stories when I didn't have money to go back to varsity. I went around the community asking for some cash and asking for people to give me some donation if I can go back to school. And
how
I collected.
Old were you
then? Then now I was actually, I did my diploma and then I was done with my BTEC, and then I wanted to do my honors, you know, because when I got to varsity, it was the first time I could actually start reading, start learning, and I started enjoying it. And I wanted to actually even go further with it. So I did collect some funds. I was about 400 rand. I took a taxi, came to Joburg. First few days was hard because I had to sleep outside campus because I didn't have money to get a place to stay till I got admitted. So yeah.
First few days you slept outside.
Yes.
Where did you sleep?
It was a funny story because I did have access to get into the university, but I would sleep outside the stairs. I'm just carried myself somewhere there
in the stairs.
Yeah.
Man, I've actually encountered someone like that at some point. We used to study late night on campus, and then I needed to go to the bathroom at some point, and as I get to the bathroom, I'm hearing one, there's something breathing in the bathroom, and it doesn't sound like just someone just chilling, having their bathroom time. No. It sounds like sleep. So I get curious, and I literally peep over the wall, and there's a student sleeping in the toilet, and I thought, yo, hey, I wonder what happened to him later on. You know, someone probably saw you once upon a time, they thought, yo, what's going to happen to the student? Yo, what do you think about those type of situations, those scenarios where you've got your back against the wall, there's literally nowhere to go, and there's no one to call, and you just decide, okay, cool, it's just me and these stairs. Tell us, take us through what goes on in your mind around that time.
You know, when you're dreaming, you know, following your dream makes you do stupid things, you know. You do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
It's the only option. There's no other option. I mean,
yeah.
You know, because you want to get into school.
Yeah.
So it's, at that time for me, it was, it's either this or nothing, you know. Because I remember at the time we did have a family intervention to say you can't go back. So leaving home, I knew I didn't have any other support. So for me, that was it.
you left home knowing that no one is behind you.
They
had a family intervention. Yeah, I know how these family interventions go.
You know what? We don't have money. It's not in a bad. Not to say that they didn't love you. It was for them to say, you know what? We don't have the money.
Mm.
So if you want to go back, you're on your own.
Yeah.
So for me, it was the only option.
So you went around the community
asking
for money. Where were you staying at the time? Where's the community?
I'm in Mpumalanga.
Mpumalanga.
Yeah.
So you're in Middelburg, Mpumalanga. Right there in the town or like in the Kasi of Middelburg?
In the Kasi, yeah.
All right. So, busy Kasi Akuman. What's the Kasi called?
It's called Mhluzi.
Mhluzi. So, use Mhluzi.
Yes.
And you are looking around, knocking on doors, greeting Abu Makhelwane, asking for donations to go back to varsity. 10 rand here, 5 rand here, 10 rand here, 5 rand there. People are calling you names, they're calling you crazy. Why are you embarrassing the family going around asking for money? Because, you know, I know how families want to look like they can afford their lives.
Yeah.
They want to look like they can afford their children. So now when their children are going out doing these things, sometimes the very same people you're trying to help, because you're trying to take away the pressure from the parents by going out and asking, are the same people who are saying, don't do this, you're embarrassing us, don't do this. And you make 400 bucks after all your effort. I don't know what your goal was. What was your goal when you went out? Was it to make a 400 rand, or was it to make maybe enough to pay tuition and accommodation or something like that?
Mainly was to get into varsity, pay fees, accommodation.
Yeah.
So I think the 400 rand was enough for me to go to Joburg. And then when I got admitted, that's when I started looking for a job. And good enough, I became a student tutor at the university, which was enough to actually start paying for my accommodation and where I stay.
This man is a hustler, ladies and gentlemen. I just need to increase that hustler music, because he's a hustler. I mean, here's the thing, guys. You know, sometimes you don't have enough for the, you know, for the whole thing. You just have enough for Solanka. And you have to just take that and get, because, I mean, you could have said, oh no, what can I do with 400? 400 is not enough to pay for varsity. 400 can't even play for accommodation for a month. 400 can't do jack. It can only buy me a jacket. So let me just buy this jacket and stay home. But you said 400 can get me to Gauteng. You know, which varsity was it, by the way?
University of Johannesburg.
UJ. 400 can get me the taxi, can get me there, and it can probably feed me while I'm there for a week or two. All right, that's enough. Because when I'm there, I'll make another plan.
Yeah.
And you had to bet on yourself, because no one was willing to make a plan for you.
True.
Mom was not saying, don't worry, when you get there, I'll convince your father and we'll send 1,000 rand. Nothing. And you just went with this belief that it's going to work out somehow.
Yeah.
You didn't even know how. But, you know, normally when you're out there, somehow along the line, you know, you meet someone. I think it goes with the saying of you know, people who are spectators, who love soccer but are just spectators, never get to score any goals. You know, if your feet aren't physically both in the field, you ain't going to do nothing close to being a top goal scorer or even just an attempt at goal. Nothing. In fact, it won't even count. Even if the ball comes to you by accident and you throw it to the ball, to the goalpost, it won't count as even an attempt.
Sure.
You know, you need to physically be in there. And you decided, you know what? I can't dream of university if I'm not in front of the university trying. I can't say I want to be in varsity sitting at home. I need to go there. I need to find a way. And
imagine, you know, it was a matter of, you know, it's either you stay home and you look for a job, or you actually follow your dreams, you know. And since coming to Joburg, I must say, after graduating with my BCom honors, I got a job at a company, and then I actually even rose up, you know. I got I won the Standard Bank Rising Star Award.
Wow.
And I had a chance to even take my mom overseas, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I took her to Rome, you know, for the first time for her and for us, you know.
Yeah.
And I always look back and said, you know, what if I just stayed home and listened and did nothing, you know. I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good to listen, but sometimes you need to block the naysayers and say, you reached the right number, but at the wrong time. I'm out of here. You know, because that's where my turning point came as well. In fact, I got to a point where I was at peace with the thought of, if I try and fail. I said, if I try and fail, then I'll be right back here. It will be like I never did anything. Or I might be a little bit at the bottom, but I'll bounce. I'll come back up, you know. Or what's the worst that could happen? Like, it's best. You know what? It's better when you are actually trying to go for your dreams from rock bottom, because you're already at the bottom. It don't get lower than this, man. It only gets up from here, yeah. You know. So you were already in Ekasi. So you said, what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is I could fail and come back to Ekasi. You know what? Then I would be where I started. So let me try anyway, yeah. Rather than just staying here and you know, and not going for that thing. Because you actually risked your life, man. You know, you could have gone out there, you could have been part of a human traffic incident. And I don't know what could happen to you. Anything could happen, because you were still young at the time. You know, like, you don't even have money, you don't have anything. The parents could be scared. What if you get involved in drugs and you start selling your body for money? You never know what could happen. And that's, of course, always the paranoia that that parents have, and that it's, you know, the things that could hold you back too. It's thinking about all the things that could go wrong,
yeah.
But you just thought of all the things that could go right this time around, and you just believed that. I don't know if you know how big that was. Actually, it was huge for you to just leave home with $400 in your pocket and sleep. Literally, it's like being homeless. You were homeless,
yeah.
You know. You can say, I slept on the stairs. You slept on the streets, man. Like, actually, yeah. You were homeless.
Yeah.
And you decided, you know what? I'm going to be at peace with this. You probably didn't even tell your family at home what's really going on. Because that's actually, you know, when you're doing that individual journey, that journey to success, there are some things that will not be explainable. It's inexplicable to other people, because they will immediately say, why are you putting yourself through that? Yeah. Come home. Stop that thing. Mm-hmm. And something in you says, it's going to be worth it. Yeah. It's going to be worth it. You know, I have a similar story to you. I actually relate with you on so many levels. There was a time where I slept under office desks for a year. Because I needed to MC, and I needed to get that skill, and I needed to improve it, and I needed the money too. And but the place was like 45 kilometers away from where I stayed on campus and so on. I was a student at the time. It was easy to get a taxi to go there at around 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the evening. But at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night,
yeah.
There were no taxis coming back. At first, I had a friend who would use, you know, who would lift me, but then eventually he's like, yo, man, I lost the car, an accident or whatever. I don't know his story. Then I had nothing. Then I had the option of either just drop this whole dream thing and just go back to campus and just be a normal student, or figure out another way. Hustle, man. And I decided, you know what, I could probably just hang around the office, wait for people to leave. and when they left, you know, I just kind of tried to sleep on the office chairs. But the office chairs had wheels, so they kind of spin out of me while I'm sleeping. And then eventually I had to decide, you know what, I need a stable foundation. And so I decided to sleep under the desk, because if I'm under the desk, even if someone comes in, they don't know that someone's actually sleeping here today. And some days I would oversleep, so like I could hear people coming for their morning shift. I'm like, oh shucks, have to quickly get up, get out. You literally, there's no toiletries, man. You just go to the bathroom, just wash your mouth, wash your face, get out there, get that taxi, go back. People see me in the evening coming to work when they're coming home, right, with the taxis. And then they see me in the morning when they're going to work, and they're like, shucks, this guy looks like yesterday. Where was he? You know, I know where I was. I was at home.
And I'm going to say, you know, it's never easy.
It's never easy.
Never easy.
And if I had explained to my parents what was happening, if I told my mom that I'm sleeping on the desk, she'd be like, hey, you ain't there to study. Stop that. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, yo, I can't explain it to you. It's just, it's my dream, and I know it's going to work out. I just don't know at the moment how, but I just have this feeling, man, you know. And you had that feeling that it's going to work out.
Yeah.
You slept, and you try to, you know, you try to play it down like it was just, I slept on the stairs for a couple
and
of days.
How long? You still need to wake up in the morning and still go hustle.
Yeah.
Doors is closed right in front of your face.
Yeah.
Door after door.
How did you, I mean, how many days did you actually sleep on those stairs that you're talking about?
So I spent there, got there on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. That's when things started to actually make sense, you know.
You got the same pair of clothes, or were you changing clothes?
Changing clothes, yeah.
And where would you freshen up? In the bathrooms?
Yeah, in the bathrooms. I wasn't planning on going back home, so I did take some clothes.
Okay, and and when people find you sleeping there, what would happen?
So I did have an encounter where security guards did find me sleeping, so they took me in and started asking questions, what's going on. So in that, you do tell them, guys, I'm here to register, I want to get into the university. So yeah, they just keep you in their office for the night, and you know, in the morning then you go back and do your thing.
Sucks. And but when did things then, you know, take a turn for the better?
I had a friend of mine who was working in the university. He called me up and said, "No, there's actually an offer space in a certain course, which is strategic management. Go there and try and see if you can get in." And when I got there, I met a lady who was like very nice and started saying, "No, there's actually space. Let's start and see if you can fit you in." And later on, they said, "No, you actually accepted." So I was actually happy about that. I think the hardest part was getting the accommodation.
Yeah.
Because the lady there, they made me wait forever. Yeah. They told me, "You know what, you're wasting your time here because there's no space." I just sat there because I had nowhere else to go. Yeah. And just waited and waited and waited.
Wow.
Till they're like, "No, just give me your ID and then give it to you." And I was glad I just stayed there because, you know, prompted them to actually start helping.
So then you got student accommodation with the university?
With the university.
Oh, wow.
Which made things much easier.
That's actually smart. Like, instead of those kids who just walk away because they're like, you're on the waiting list, you just decided, you know what, stop the waiting list. I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to show you guys that I'm actually desperate. You know, I need this thing more than anybody needs it because I'm the only one here.
Yeah.
Wow. This must have taught you a lot about humility, a lot about... When is it time to put aside your ego for your dream? A lot about, you know, those type of things. Tell me a bit about what that journey and the journey of life really just taught you about all of that.
I have to say, following your dreams is one of the most difficult things one can do for themselves. It's easy to go get a job and maintain that lifestyle, but if you're following your dreams, you know, anything can happen in any day, you know. You can just sit for a while and have no money, get demotivated, and you know, feel that you actually not worth it, you know, whatever you're doing is not worth it. So I must say it taught me a lot to actually understand that things do take time. You know, it takes time for you to be in a certain level. You know, you need to put in the effort, you need to understand that that is going to take time, you know.
Yeah.
You put yourself in it, and wherever the road takes you, go with it, you know.
Yeah.
And every day, something does come up,
whether
it's now or tomorrow, but things do happen.
Wow. So you finish your degree?
Yes, I actually graduated 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah, I got my diploma, got my BTEC, and got my honors degree.
Yeah,
in record time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, you went against the grain. You had a moment in your life where you were not a great reader and everybody criticized you about it. And now you're an author. You write books. Man,
that's a funny story.
Talk about disappointing your haters, you know? this is really inspiring, and that's amazing. Tell me a bit about your books.
So my first book was Ground Up, a practical approach to building yourself for success. I'm mainly telling people about the story of where I come from, the hardships I went through to where I am currently, you know, the things that I've achieved, with things that where I was told that you as a person will never get there, you know. And it was emphasized so many times in my life that it became a reality.
Yeah.
You know? But I did make sure that let me just push and see if I can actually make it in life, you know. So that book talks about my experience in life, talks about how I made it, talks about the you know, all the good things and bad things, you know.
Yeah.
So currently I'm working on my second one. I was supposed to have launched it in August, but we're still busy interviewing some entrepreneurs. It's called Entrepreneurs, The Hustler's Paradise, where mainly is focusing on how did you make it as an entrepreneur. and taking that into what do people say in theory about making it as an entrepreneur, and actually taking it back to the people to actually tell them, this person has been hustling for 10 years and they're still hustling and they haven't made it, and you want to do it in 2 days or 3 weeks and give up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm focusing on.
Oh, this is amazing, man. And how is the book industry really? You know, that I always encounter young people saying, hey, I'm writing a book, or hey, I'm thinking of writing a book, or, you know, oh, you should write a book. And they don't really know how easy or hard it is, or, you know, what some of the challenges are when writing a book. Tell me a bit about the journey of writing a book. You're now going to, I mean, you've written more than one book, so you've learned some stuff by now. Tell me a bit about the challenges and also some of those unexpected things that, I don't know if you knew, but you also need to know this.
Yeah, so I must say with publishers, if you're not good, they're not going to actually even consider you. They need you to be proper. They need your work to actually speak something that they can represent themselves. Yes. So make sure if you want to get into that business, you're a good writer. You're writing a story that can sell, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you're very much famous and marketing is already easy, then you can actually get
it. Then you can make spelling mistakes.
You can make your spelling mistakes. But I might say, you know, if you do make the spelling mistakes, great. I always say that until you do it, you never understand what it takes to actually get there.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a challenging environment. It does need a lot of work. I mean, it's reading. You know, you have to give people what they want to see. You know, they want to read. You know, it needs to be proper and good. You know, so, and it also represents you.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then in terms of some of the things that you think that most of us don't know about. You know, publishing a book.
Yeah. So I must say it's not that hard, especially if you self-publishing. You know, you need to actually get your content very. You need to get your book or your work ready. You need to get it at that level where it can be sold. You know, sellable.
Yeah.
In a way, you know. So getting the people to actually do it, it's very much easy. You just need to make sure that you get a printer. You need to make sure you get in contact with libraries for them to get you your ISBN code. You need to make sure that you get your barcodes right, and all those things. I mean, to get that code is cheap. It's for free, actually. To get a barcode, it's about 400 rand. To print your books, it's even cheaper, you know. So I always say focus on getting your content right, and then the rest is just easy for you to do.
Okay. And how expensive is it? Like, let's say how many books does a person make? Like when you're saying, oh, I got books, I published some books. How many books do you print out? And then you say, okay, cool, now I can say, yeah, I got a good arsenal of books.
It depends, you know. I do a lot of talks with different organizations.
Yeah.
So at times you find that they will ask, no, bring 50 books with you.
Yeah.
You know, bring 10, bring 20, friends and family to ask that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it depends.
You know? So you print about, let's say, 500 books?
Not yet.
Okay.
Let's say about 200.
Cool. I want to start, and I'm going to start with 200 books.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I'm going to sell my books and everything. How much do you think I need to have in my pocket if I say, I got good content and I want to print 200 books? And I want to just be an author.
Yeah. Probably 10,000, right?
Really?
Yeah.
It's not that expensive. Okay.
And then you get a lot of books, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you heard it, guys. It's actually not, it's not as hard as it, you know, it sounds. You know, sometimes when you imagine, you're thinking, but it sounds like I need a lot of money. Yeah, authors sound like, you know, they had to have a lot of money to make a lot of money.
And I must say also, it was the fact that I wanted to self-publish to teach myself how to do it from step by step, and actually go back to the youth and say, yes, we don't have a lot of opportunities or money at hand, but here's a process for you to follow if you're interested, which won't actually cost you an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
You know?
How does one get that step-by-step tutorial, or like how did you get that information of, okay, cool, now I need the ISBN number, okay, now I need a barcode, okay, now I need a, you know, how did you know where to go and which doors to knock on?
reading, you know, go online, Google, read, and
go on Google and say, publishing your own book, 101 tutorial.
What do I need?
Yeah, what do I need? And then you get it right there.
Yeah.
It's amazing, man. A story of reading, a story of confidence, a story of betting on yourself, a story of just so much inspiration. Man, you got a great story to tell. Well done with everything that you've accomplished, everything that you've done. If you had to leave us with some gem of wisdom, what would you say?
Believe in yourself. You know, I think that's the most important thing for us to do as people.
Yeah.
Believe in yourself, you know. Even if it's just the craziest thing ever, believe in yourself, you know. Mm. I mean, currently we have an outdoor gym. I mean, look at that, you know. Somebody actually thought about that, you know. Just create outdoor gym, put them in each and every park. It was a belief, you know. I read the story, you know. It took that guy about 15 years to even get the local municipality to agree with him. That long to actually get their dreams out there. But because you believe in yourself, you know, that's what is important.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent stuff indeed. When we come back, we carry on with the fantastic chats. We got some great gentlemen doing absolutely amazing things.
CliffCentral.com.
Cool stuff. So we return, and we've got, of course, a couple of really amazing stories to tell, and we got some amazing, amazing gentlemen doing absolutely amazing things. This time around, I've got Tepo and Teboho right here with me. These guys are also doing some really, really awesome stuff. It's really great to hear the story of the come up. We've got the director and the trainee here. That's what the profile still says. I don't know if the titles have changed since then. But let me get them on the mic. How are you doing, gentlemen?
I'm doing great, gentlemen.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Let me just see one mic, two mic, or this mic is the other mic. I just want to make sure that I also have the gentleman in the suit. Your mic is on as well now. Oh, no, not yet. Evan, what is that? What is that? All right, let me just get your mic playing as well. All right, there we go. Mic one. There we go. Cool. All right. How you guys doing?
No, man, I'm doing well. I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. So, gentlemen, tell me a bit about what you guys do. Tell me about your hustle. And this is by no means a comparison. So I'm not comparing one man's journey to another man's journey. We just want to hear about amazing stories. And that you can be ordinary people and just say amazing things, you know. So tell me a bit about the company.
We're from TMMPS. TMMPS is a world-class owned African consulting firm.
Yeah.
So basically, we offer accounting, taxation, advisory, and auditing services. We basically service small and medium-sized companies. We are based here in 19 Fonia Road, just down there.
So when did you guys start?
We started 2016.
Yeah.
Basically, we started before, but formally registered 2016. That's where I partnered with Bonto. And then he was a CEO, I was a tax practitioner, and then we decided to open our own accounting firm.
Yeah.
But it grew into becoming a consulting firm now
because
we've added other services like strategy and research, HR services.
Oh, interesting. Now, tell me, you know, there's many things that that people who just open up their first business don't quite understand about this tax world and all that type of stuff. I know that it's October now, meaning that it's the last month to kind of submit your returns and things like that. And a couple of us are still in the dark. Like, we're like, what exactly must happen in this tax period? You know, what should we be submitting, and how does it really all work? Like, do you have any wise wisdom to share in terms of that? Like, what should we know around the tax issue?
Yeah, no, tax is very important, and it's very important for, I can say, taxpayers to be compliant.
Yeah.
So, just my advice, if obviously you're working and your employer deducts, pays you and from you, obviously they need to give you an IRP-5 at the end of the financial year end, and then when the tax season opens, you need to submit those tax returns. As well, if you own a company, usually they say they put you under a provisional taxpayer.
Okay.
So if you get maybe like two income, and that two income is more than the threshold that they've stipulated.
What is the threshold?
To submit, it's 350,000 now.
A year.
Yeah, a year. So you still need to submit if it's that. But if you earn maybe, let's say, under 350,000 from your work, but you're still getting rental income, you also need to disclose.
Okay, it feels like a lot of stuff. Okay,
yeah.
Let's say, okay, I let's say, for instance, I work, right? Yes. I work somewhere and I get an IRP-5 form because I work. But then I started my own side hustle business, Nyana, on the side. And we're not really making that much money yet.
Yeah.
But like, we are registered with you know, CIPC. We have a company, and we think we are registered with SARS because you know, we registered with that process where they just kind of tell you that, okay, here's your tax number. So we are registered with SARS. Mara, we are not making money. So like, I don't know. Like, should we be submitting, and how frequently should I be submitting?
Okay, so here's how it happens. If you are working, obviously you are a taxpayer on your own as an individual.
Mm.
And you have a company, that company is also a taxpayer on its own.
Yeah.
So now it's two different things.
Yeah.
So if you get an IRP-5, you need to submit on your personal capacity.
Yeah.
That's an obligation that you have to fulfill every year.
Mm.
Also, when you have a company, you still need to submit every year. Even if you're submitting zeros, but you still need to submit this.
Yeah.
They have to, because what they do after every financial year end, your status go to non-compliant. Meaning now you need to submit. If you don't submit, you won't be able to get government jobs and so forth.
Are there fines for not submitting?
Yeah, they charge administration penalties. But this one, they are applying it more on individuals. So they charge, it ranges from like 250 rand per month to 16,000 rand per month. But depending on your tax bracket.
Hmm.
And then on the company side, they charge 10% if you submit late. So let's say you're
10% of the amount you owe.
No, 10% of your the current tax payable.
Okay.
So they charge 10% on that. So if you're owing 20,000 and then you submit, if you owe them 20,000, they charge an additional 10%, which is like 2,000 rand
per month.
No. That's once off per month. Okay. They then charge 1%. It's a lot for individuals. That's the thing. So, but usually, what you can do if your company is still starting out, you can register for turnover tax. That's one of the benefits. So when you register for turnover tax, if your turnover is less than 350,000 rand, you don't need to pay anything. You can disclose that turnover, and then they'll charge you a nil on your tax.
It's called turnover tax.
It's called turnover tax instead of the CIT, which is your corporate income tax. But it also has its disadvantages.
What are the disadvantages?
So now, with turnover tax, if it's more than 350,000, there's a fixed amount that you need to pay. So it's like, I think it's around 5,670.
Jeez.
If it's between 350,000 and 400,000. So that's the disadvantage, because now it's fixed. You cannot add other tax deductible items on it so that your tax can be reduced. That's the problem, yeah.
I like you because you know your stuff. You know, I checked out the SARS website recently and your numbers are absolutely accurate. 250,000, 16,000. I was listening, like, if you made a mistake, I was like, and you just spot on, which is excellent, excellent for me. So now, okay, here's the other scenario. I have a job, but I do things on the side, Mara, I'm the sole proprietor. Like, it's me. Like, yeah, I had to register a company because those companies wanted an invoice, and I was like, yeah, worried, like, am I going to write my name up there? No, let me write a company name. It will look nice. Maybe one day the company can be big, but right now I am the company. So that money that the company makes, so I even sometimes transfer it to my personal account because I feel like it's my money. But now, am I going to pay double tax?
It becomes a problem if you pay that amount into your personal bank account. Mm. So now, meaning you have to disclose the RP5 and the bank statements. So they're going to tax you now on two incomes. Mm. The one coming from the company and the one coming from your employer. Mm. That's why it's always advisable, if you run a business, just make sure that if you work and then you have a side business, just make sure some of the income they go into your business, not your personal account.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that refreshments, entertainment costs, they are not tax deductible.
Mm.
So you're not supposed to use your business account to buy your personal stuff. Like, you're not supposed to use your business account to go to restaurants, to buy your toiletries and so forth. Those are not tax deductible. You might get into trouble for that. But if you you know your turnover, just an advice, if you know you're working, your turnover is not more than 350,000 rand, register for turnover tax. It's less hassle because you just disclose your turnover. They bill you from that. If it's less than, they don't bill you anything. It's a nil. Mm. And then, obviously, those tax deductible items and non-tax deductible items, they don't apply anymore.
But you are allowed to use some of your business money for meals if it is like a business.
No.
Oh.
It's not. It's exempt, actually. Because SARS, they've changed it. Because a lot of people used to take clients out, maybe like, let's say I'd fly a client to Dubai and I'd claim it as a business expense.
Yeah.
Like what, if you saw the recent incidents with the Guptas, they paid for a wedding and they disclosed that amount as a tax deduction.
Oh, wow.
Now SARS is coming back to say, no, it was a personal expense, actually.
Mm.
You know, so it's a fringe benefit, meaning you are not supposed to claim it as a tax deduction. So basically, SARS will charge 28% on that amount. So they need to pay SARS that money back.
Gee.
That's why.
Who does SARS tell when they change these things?
They tell us. So obviously, it's important if you have a business, you need to have such accountants who are clued up.
Yeah. My goodness. Okay. So, but what if I did it in the past now? Like, is it going to come and haunt me now? Because there was advice before, no, man, you're allowed to take out your clients, you know, just, in fact, since you are a sole proprietor, you can, I mean, chances are most of the time when you go and you do a service somewhere, let's say, for instance, we have a Brian going to speak at a seminar, and then he needed to buy his own food, and then he's like, this is a business trip, I'm going to buy myself food, it's his business expense, and this fuel that I'm using, this is business. And he feels like that whole thing was him at work. So that's why he made, you know, he took out his business card for this particular payment. And then he knows when he's at home and he's doing groceries, he'll take out his personal one.
Yeah, at least on fuel, you can be able to claim it. It's tax deductible.
And on repairing your car.
Repairing your car is tax deductible as long as you can prove that it was used for generating income for the business.
The other thing is, then that you probably need to tell your insurance company that you use this car for
personal and business.
Personal and business.
That's correct.
Eish.
So and it's more of what you can prove when it comes to SARS. Yeah, it's what you can
prove. But then the insurance company is going to charge you more when you say it's business. People, it's like we can't win here, man.
Can't win. See. Because the other thing is that they change this act every year. They find a loophole,
it's because of this reshuffling.
Loophole,
a new minister comes, he wants to change things.
Yeah, that's
good. No more shuffling. Reshuffling must fall.
You need to impress. But you just need I always advise clients.
Yeah.
Get an accountant or a tax practitioner or whatever, a financial advisor that's clued up.
Yeah.
You know, so that they can advise you to say, this is the route that you need to take. This is how much you must pay yourself in order to not pay as you earn. Or if you want to pay less pay as you earn, this is how much you have to pay yourself.
Yeah.
So if you have someone like that, it's good.
Hey, man. Yeah. Every time I speak to an accountant, I just feel like, help me. Help my life. Oh, man. I think I need you in my life. because there's just always so much knowledge you guys have, and you know, and I think sometimes you know, having someone like you on a, you know, on a cell phone and just being able to say, yo man, help me out real quick here, sometimes you guys can, you know, help people get out of so much trouble. And I think, I mean, I've seen headlines of celebrities attending court cases right now because of tax and things. And we're all scared of tax, but we don't know what to do, you know. It's because there was never a day where they said, okay, at school, hey, one day you guys will earn money, so let's teach you about tax. It never happened. And now they're just expecting you to know. And it's bad.
I think when it comes to celebrities, it goes back to what you're asking. Most of them are freelancers.
Yeah.
So sometimes they just declare one income, and then they don't declare another one, and they think it's perfect.
Yeah.
But actually, if you do three jobs, you need to declare all the three income so that they can calculate where is your tax bracket.
Yeah.
And then they start taxing you from there. So if you just declare one, it means we can't tax you on the other two. So now it's a loss to the revenue service.
Yeah. Hey, it's rough. I know some people overseas wanna rather get paid in cash so that they just out of these troubles. But obviously that too has its own consequences.
Yeah.
Yo, it really just sounds like it's an uphill battle, man. Sharks. Yo. But thanks. I think you know, you're helping us see the importance of understanding your tax, understanding that these things change every year and that your knowledge might be outdated. In fact, sometimes even if you graduated 2015 and you're thinking, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Hey, man, you need to go check again. So what do you guys do, actually? Do you go to regular seminars to try and make sure that you're still up to date with what's going on?
Basically, we attend endeavors. Mm-hmm. We registered under accounting and tax boards.
Okay.
So every time they send us, whenever there's a change that an act that has been changed, they always send us updates in terms of this is what's different. And then once a year, you have to write tests so that your CPD score can go up. So that's how you also keep yourself trued up.
Okay. Oh, interesting. I also have Mr. Silevi here with me as well. He's got a famous name, I wonder. Debucho, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Mr.
Cool stuff. So you also part of the team, and you're still a student.
I'm still currently studying towards also my BCom accounting degree, and obviously hopefully go further.
What do you think are the benefits of working while you're studying at the same time?
You know, actually, funny enough, yesterday I was speaking to the accounts manager of Sage, because we also have a partnership with them as well. So he was also speaking about how, since he's gone into like consulting, speaking at school, speaking for psycho events and so forth, he's realizing that there's a gap between what the students theoretically know and what's actually practically happening. Because, excuse me, because if you look at now, we're living in a time where especially technology is coming into accounting, and technology, you know, moves quick. Tomorrow something is up, next week something is up as well. So we're living in a fast-paced society, and there's an effect of technology coming into accounting and compliance. So for me, the benefit that I can see, and it's, I feel like it's actually working for me, is that the experience that I get from school and the experience that I get from actually practically doing the work is two different things. Because the foundation is set by obviously university, but then the actual practical work and understanding in depth, like Tepo says, you have tests and so forth, comes from the practical stuff. So with school, the issue is that you don't know what you don't know. But with practical, it's like, you know, so
at least you know what you don't know.
Yeah, with school, you don't know what you don't know. But with practical, you know, I didn't know this. Now you read up on it. And
that's powerful. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's deep. And at least this side, you know what you don't know, so you can do something about it.
Yeah, true. Because textbook, I get it, that's one. It's been the same for how many.
And that's the danger. I mean, I just heard that, it was just mentioned that things change almost all the time, like almost every week.
Yeah.
Every year, there's new changes being put into effect. And if you have an old textbook, and they, and by the way, do they teach South African tax in the textbooks, or do they teach international tax?
South African.
Yeah.
Okay, at least it's South African.
Yeah,
but it still changes so many times, and you can literally fall behind, right?
True.
Like the, you looked at the 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we were using 14% for VAT.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
It's 15%.
Mm.
Last year there was no sugar tax. Now you have to account for sugar tax. Some such things.
Yeah.
No, true.
Yo. I know, it's rough. And the sugar tax implication is huge for companies, hey, because they've had to reinvent the products. They had to either change the sizes or the price. Mm. They're so scared of changing the price, so rather change the size or the labeling and say something else like sugar-free and hope that people think that that's a good thing and not, oh, they're saving money. They added sweetener instead of sugar and now, you know, because... Yo, it's rough what's happening that side.
Cause you must blame the health department.
I got to learn about that because I was actually emceeing an event for you know a big company that is in line with you know these soft drinks and so on, and you know it there. That's why I got to see how big the implication is actually on something small like hey we are increasing the sugar tax because we want our people to be healthy or we want to make more money from these international companies who are bringing in sugar here and leaving our people with diabetes. You know, yeah, and all the so it you know it helps on one side also is something that puts a lot of strain on the other side. Some companies decide to cut costs by cutting employees instead. Yeah. You never quite know how it's going to turn out. But I mean, what we're learning here is that things change all the time, and when you have you know a foot in academia, while you have the other also in the practical world, you actually get to learn a lot. Better, I guess.
No, true,
right?
True. Because you know the funniest thing for me is obviously when I started, I didn't expect accounting to be actually not entirely different to what we learn in school. But like I'm saying, we use like a different software.
Yeah.
In reality, as opposed to what they teach us at school. So also having to adapt to now to say, okay, fine, this is what I actually studied, but then when I go work, this is what it's actually being used. Mm. So my concern would also be that students are gonna come out, but they're gonna be in the same position as the 50-year-old accountant. Because now, the 50-year-old accountant has been doing things the same way. Technology improves, regulations improve, and now he has to adapt to a new way, like to now times. And then you as a student as well, you've been in school for 3 years, 4 years, same textbook. Then you come out, then they tell you, no, we do things this way. This is what you need to know about. So now you guys are in the same position, you know, by actually just being... different generations, but in the same position because you don't have that practical aspect to it. So for me, when I actually learn theory and practical, I mean, it becomes much more fun. It becomes much more, but this is no longer relevant. Okay, I'll focus on this, you know. So it also helps you with also specializing because a lot of people want to be CAs and so forth, but they don't know why.
Yeah.
You understand? So I feel like with actually being in the environment of working and training, you get to see that actually I want to do tax. Like he's tax. I don't like tax. I want to be more in audits. I'm that guy. I want to read, crunch numbers and see and tell a story from the numbers. So I'm more the person that audits, you know, and finance and stuff. So my thing is that with that practical experience, that's how you actually get to know. Because a lot of people choose accounting because they heard that it pays well. You know, and then you go into it and it's like, actually, no, I don't want to do this. So my thing is that it really, really helps to get yourself out there and learn.
Yeah, so that you actually know, does it practically serve my you know, does it fuel my passion?
True.
And if it doesn't, then at least you can do something about it earlier.
Because unfortunately, people find out too late. You know, you're done with school, how much fees was that?
Well,
now you're actually working, you have to pay off your student loan, and like, actually, I don't like doing this. Now you're miserable, and you're only, 28?
Yeah.
Now you're going to be miserable for the next
20
rest of your life, basically.
Years, yeah. Yeah, it gets rough, right?
Yeah, I know.
Now, I'm actually a bit worried about accountants, especially the entry-level ones, the tax practitioners. I'll tell you why. It's because artificial intelligence is starting to do quite a lot of that stuff automatically.
Yeah.
There are banking apps. You guys probably heard of them.
Yeah.
And this app does more than just banking now. It actually does instant accounting, instant invoicing, instant payroll. All the stuff that used to be offered as line items, you guys knew, okay, I'm going to make 10,000 from these guys from this one, and another 5,000 here, and another 3,000 there.
Yeah.
And these guys are giving me a fresh 18K or 20K because you knew how your money was going to come out. But now they're saying, shucks, I've got an app that can do all that stuff for me.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is sign. I just need your signature. How much for your signature? You're like, ace, ah, signature, ace. And it, and not only that, but I see more and more companies that are starting to, I mean, big organizations that are starting to collaborate.
Yeah.
I imagine something, and then when I check the CIPC website, it's actually about to happen. The thing I imagined, which was at the moment, you know, you have that instant accounting app that checks your transactions and, you know, gives you all the financial statements, the management statement, whatever you want. It actually gives you all the terms that are mentioned in by SARS. It gives it to you. Then I thought, the only way this app is doing this, obviously, is because it knows all your banking information. And CIPC is already connecting to some of the banks where you can already register your company with the, you know, through the bank itself, and then the bank opens up a bank account for you and you're registered and everything is done, and it can literally happen that quickly. So a couple of people got knocked out because they used to do those jobs for people. I'll get you BEE. Now you can there's a button called instant BEE. Pop, and your BEE is done. And that means those guys just lost out on the money that they used to get. And guess what? Now, what's starting to happen is SARS is starting to have these auto correspondence with banks, and you can actually set that up where SARS checks your banks on their own, and you actually out of it. And I'm imagining this one has not happened yet, but the bank sends the IR, all these things, the IR what's and the ITs what, all these things happen without you even being needed in the picture. It helps SARS because then they're not worried about you not paying your tax.
Yeah.
They'll just take it out as a debit order, or they take it out per month or something, and you're always compliant. And it looks like AI might just get to that place, and I'm worried that what will happen when we get there to our accountants.
You know, you're right.
Yeah, but fortunately, I don't think AI can get to that point.
Why not?
When it comes, let's make an example. When it comes to auditing,
yeah,
it's I can say an emotional connection, because now you provide an independent opinion.
Yeah.
So someone needs to do that. The system can't do that. Right.
Why can't the system just, like, a transaction is a transaction is a transaction. Like, the system looks at the transaction, looks at where it comes from, flags a flag. If it uses your algorithm, the decision making that you go through to decide if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
The system, it would be hard for you to authenticate. You know, maybe like, let's say, source documents. So I can just put an invoice saying it's from Cliff Central in the system. The system is just going to capture it like that. But the system can't authenticate. The system can't call Cliff Central to say, do you have this person on your database?
What if? Okay, so we are just, we're not attacking you at the moment, right? We're just going through these hypothetical scenarios. Yeah. So it was all an electric payment. So that means there's electric trail, meaning that there's like paper trail from the EFT machine that I use, that Cliff Central, all the way to my bank, all the way to SARS. Yeah. So they don't need a physical invoice because they could see those trails and they know where you paid and what you bought.
Yeah, but we must pay in mind, there's a, like, we encounter this a lot. There's a lot of clients who take cash withdrawals.
Yeah.
And then some of them, they might chow that money. Mm-hmm. And then when there's an audit, they say, I paid for 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And then they just produce. They can go into a garage, collect invoices that amount to 20,000.
Do you think that now what could happen is your work could be reduced to only looking at the cash withdrawals?
But the auditing is still going to be the same. Audit process is still going to be the same.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, let's say someone goes to maybe, let's say, a fuel station.
Yeah.
Takes invoices that amount to maybe 10,000 rand.
Yeah.
You need someone, a forensic auditor, to go there and check civilian cameras. A machine can't do that.
Or what if they say you have, you know how these slips nowadays have these QR codes that you have to scan?
Yeah.
And they say every slip you get, you must scan. Otherwise, it doesn't count.
I think it's a matter of, like, what they're doing with when they give you a petrol card.
Yeah.
Someone who has a petrol card from a company can just say, hey, my guy, just give me 500 rand. I'll pull 500 rand for you. So now it reflects on the petrol card, but the petrol was not in his tank.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So I feel like artificial intelligence will work for us to our benefits, but it won't take business away from us.
Yeah. Just to add on what Seb was saying, I get your point when you speak of artificial intelligence, especially in corporate, because they are big organizations and they are just, I mean, the people that just come and be accountants, they are just more of commercial accountants. But I feel like for us, a space of entrepreneurs, we have to see the opportunity in a sense that artificial intelligence, like what Seb was saying, it automates processes for us. It makes things easier for us, meaning that we can now deliver to a client faster. We can now do your work, which you also understand, and you can also do it, you know, clearer. Yeah. So I feel like artificial intelligence, like what Seb was saying, I don't think it also gets to that point where it now does everything and you always remain compliant. But should it even get to that point, I feel like it's still fine. But as an entrepreneur, especially for us as an upcoming firm, what we've realized that with consulting, it puts us in a place where we now have to look into ourselves to say, what is the value that we give to a client? What is the value that we create for the business?
Definitely, definitely. You know? Hey, gentlemen, and just like that, our time is up. It's the shortest hour of the week. I did tell you, and it just went by that quickly. Such amazing stories. Thank you guys very much for sharing. And wow, so much was shared. Guys, if you feel like that was a little too much with all those numbers that were said a little earlier, just rewind the podcast, listen again, so that you make good decisions for yourself as well. The gentlemen and their handles and all that stuff will be available online. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's the shortest hour of the week. It's Unplugged and In Charge right here on CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.